Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Welcome to the RoadWire Prospect Podcast. I'm your host, James Anderson. This week, I'm joined by my friend, Eno Saris from The Athletic. Eno, thanks so much for joining me. How are you doing?
Doing good, Mr. Co-Manager. Sorry our team isn't doing better.
Yeah, I feel like we're going to finish in seventh place out of 20 teams and Devils Rejects for like the fourth year in a row here. But you are destroying AL Labor. And that'll be your first league title there, so that's gonna happen.
And the points record, that'll be fun.
Is that close? Is that
I think I've got it. I think I don't want to celebrate the week too early. But I currently have 114 and a half points out of a possible 120, and the record was set last year by Ian Kahn, who's in second, and he had 110, I think, or 110 and a half. So.
Yeah, Ian's made a very valiant title defense. He's second by a pretty clear margin at this point. And I know that he
made a little run at me. He made me a little nervous.
His motivation, I think, was more to kind of protect that points record.
Yeah, he was.
So, you know, I think that'll he's still gonna try to grind his way to get you under that. But I mean, that's still got to feel cool, though, right? I mean, how many years have you been in that league?
Oh my god, it's also embarrassing, dude. I mean, it's like almost just I think it's like my 10th year and there's 12 people in the team, so it's like almost just random luck.
I mean, it's kind of it's a perfect sort of, you know, what we're going to talk about today is kind of, you know, these guys may not have necessarily even been prospects coming into the year, but I want to get your take on a bunch of starting pitchers who this was sort of their first season to kind of give us a full look at what they could do as big league starters. And a lot of them kind of broke out, or a lot of them might be popular breakout picks next year. And I think a big reason for your success in AL Labor this year is that you got a couple breakout aces in Shane McClanahan and Dylan Cease. And that's, you know, that's going to really do a lot for you in an AL only league. Do you remember, like, were those guys, Cease and McClanahan, were they kind of clear targets for you coming into the auction, or was it just the right price on those guys?
Well, I wanted Justin Verlander, you know, as my ace, and I thought I was hoping to get an ace for 20, and Verlander got too expensive, went to like 25 or 26 or 27, something like that, and I wanted to get an ace for 20 and two $15 guys. That was my approach. So I got Jose Berrios for 19 and McClanahan and Cease for like 14 each. You know, the model, my pitching model, Stuff Plus and Location Plus, they like Berrios. They still like Berrios. You know, they still say he's a good pitcher. It's been a terrible year for him. But the model also gave me a lot of wins downstream in McClanahan Cease, but also my $3 pitchers were what was it? Tyler Wells, Tanner Scott. And there was one more, but Tyler Wells and Tanner Scott were just guys that I just took because Pitching Plus liked them,
nice.
And in effect. We may not talk about a lot of relievers today, but it's a really powerful model when it comes to relievers. In our league, in Devil's Rejects, we picked up Jorge Lopez and Felix Bautista this year just because the model told us to. They've been great. Felix Bautista has the number one stuff in baseball. And for anybody who's not familiar with it, Stuff Plus basically looks at the physical characteristics of the pitches and just those alone. So it's, you know, spin, movement. They're all in sort of relationship with each other too. So it's movement differential and velocity differential. And there's a seam shifted wake stat in there. So, you know, it's pretty powerful. And it's what's greatest about it is it works faster than strikeouts minus walks, which are the, which were before the fastest stat we had. So basically it shines in small samples. So these pitchers that we're going to talk about today, tells you the most about them. Now it doesn't tell you everything. It's not going to be perfect. You know, there's no perfect model, but it's really useful for when a guy comes up, throws three starts in September, and there's a role waiting for him the next year, and everybody's wondering how good they actually are. And it's awesome when they struggle a little bit, but the model says they're great. You know, like Tyler Wellesley in this sort of situation. So,
well, I'm glad you gave that that breakdown there, because we will probably be referencing Stuff Plus quite a bit here. I also wanted to mention that you have you kind of have the, like, the baseball writers equivalent to a shoe deal. You have a beard deal.
I should have one of those cans here on me, but yeah, I cannot believe it. Probably the first stat to ever be to have its own beer. But yeah, Stuff Plus, if you're in the Baltimore area, Full Tilt has cans of Stuff Plus out there with my picture on it and heat maps on the beer can.
Yeah, shout out to Dan at Full Tilt Brewing out there. Definitely pick some of that up if you're in that area.
And if you're going to Arizona, I'll bring some.
Excellent. Yeah. Can't wait to get out to Arizona. That's going to be here before you know it. Okay. So before we get into some specific pitchers, I did just want to ask you a quick separate kind of question, just because I thought you would have some really good perspective on this. And it's something you and I have kind of texted about here and there, but I get this question a lot. And I just was curious if you had any teams that kind of jumped to mind, but are there any teams where you downgrade pitchers just based on the developmental success rate of a certain regime or organization?
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, some of these places like Cleveland and Los Angeles that are well renowned for developing pitchers, sometimes I think it's less about the development of the pitcher and just about preparing them for game day. You know, just having a really awesome game day prep plus the defense behind them. If you look at the BABIP for the Dodgers this year, it's like 250. So maybe just awesome shifting plus game day prep, because, you know, my model sort of famously hates Cal Quantrill and really does not like Shane Bieber. And, you know, thinks Tristan McKenzie is slightly above average and thinks Ryan Pepiot has some of the worst command in the big leagues and never liked Josiah Gray. You know, thinks Michael Grove is okay. You know, like, you know, and these are the guys that these teams have pumped out that have succeeded, right? We see Josiah Gray go somewhere else and not succeed. Under a different regime, under different game planning, under different defense, you know? So I wonder sometimes it's, I think the Astros are very good at developing pitchers. But then there's also this aspect of what's just game day planning, game day prep, defense behind them, that sort of deal. So like Hunter Brown, I'll give him a little inch forward because he's an Astro. Like, he's got some flaws, but don't you think the Astros will develop around that and make the most out of that? Now, if we had Hunter Brown on what? The Tigers? The White Sox. There was a Hunter Brown coming up through the White Sox.
Royals.
Yes, Royals. Nationals.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where it matters most. Like, Cade Cavalli, I think, has enough stuff to outstuff his way, you know, potential injury now and stuff. But mm-hmm. I think, like, you know, if you're like if you're a top prospect, like a top 10, 20 prospect, it might not matter. You might just stuff your way through it. You're like Dylan Cease, you know, like not great development around him, but he's made it. But I think it, you know, these more fringe cases, Hunter Brown, Michael Grove, you know, guys that aren't top prospects, but you're like, oh, should I be interested in them? Be less interested in them if they're on the Nationals, the Royals, the Tigers may be changing in the few seasons, but the Angels of the past were a bad organization. They're starting to make some strides. And that's the other part. If you put somebody in a do not draft and you're just like, I'm never going to draft a Royals starting pitcher again, do you know all the hirings they're doing and like what they're doing behind the scenes and how quickly you can turn around? The Blue Jays used to be a bad place for developing starting pitching. And then they put a bunch of money into it and they made a lab and they hired new people. And I would say the Blue Jays are at least average and probably above average at it now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, you can kind of sense when the tide is shifting, but it might be too late on a certain pitcher if you're late there. The one thing with, like, you know, the Hunter Brown example and even, you know, Cleveland and the Dodgers, like they're so good at kind of making the most of the pitchers they have or developing pitchers that there's seemingly, you know, seven or eight guys for those rotations kind of heading into the year.
So then you have a separate problem, right? Yeah. Opportunity problem.
Yeah. Like it's hard to project many, you know, obviously like Justin Verlander is different, but it's hard. And Framber's obviously kind of, doing his own thing, but you're not going to project Hunter Brown for like 150 innings in the big leagues next year.
Bobby Miller, like, you know, how many innings are you going to give Bobby Miller next year?
Yeah. I mean, the Dodgers have all these guys and they're just kind of, they'll take their time and they'll give them opportunities when they want. But,
And the last thing is these guys also go to places like Driveline, right?
Mm-hmm.
So somebody who, you know, pitches for the Tigers could go to Driveline, get really good. Get an opportunity.
Yeah, like you get some outside help and then show up and just kind of do your own thing.
Mitch Keller went to Tread Athletic, you know, added two ticks on the velo, added a sweeper slider. I know that he's not amazing now, but like you would say maybe the Pirates are bad at pitching development. And yet they coached Jose Quintana back to life and they've been you know, Mitch Keller has taken a step forward, but is that Tread or is that Pirates or so it's, I think I would, you know, generally I try to not put people on do not draft lists. You know what I mean? Like there's a price, there's a moment at which it makes sense for everybody, you know? So maybe like put them down a tick, like if you're doing your rankings. But, it, you know, Jarrett Seidler wrote an interesting piece for BP recently about, like, should we be considering this? Like, you know, when we were prospect ranking, should we be considering the organization that drafted them in terms of how likely are they to hit their outcomes?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I've kind of always factored that in, but it's different when you're doing it for fantasy versus, you know, I think in Jarrett's article that you're referencing there is sort of, you're never going to see someone doing a set of prospect rankings for, you know, Fangraphs or BP or BA. And they're not going to be like, well, we're downgrading this guy a little bit because of the team he's coming up in, but you do have the freedom to do that when you're doing it just for fantasy rankings.
Right. Right. But then you have the, just like we just talked about, you have the opposite thing about opportunity that you have to think about too.
Right. Yeah. I've kind of, The more I've sort of thought about it recently is it's more kind of the places where I am really worried about the defense and, you know, the like the pitch mix. Like I always thought the Tigers were wrong in terms of what Casey Mize's usage was on his pitches and stuff like that. Like I'm more willing to kind of downgrade the bottom teams, the bad situations, than to give like a huge bump to especially an unproven pitching prospect in one of those good orgs, because you just don't know like how many innings they're going to get, when they're going to get their shot. Obviously, you give a bump to the veteran, like a Dodgers starter who you can project for 170 innings is better than a starter for any other.
Like Tyler Anderson was a pretty good pickup. Yeah. They pick up Tyler Anderson. He's going to the Dodgers. You know, Hey, draft that guy.
And that was
like, that's a different conversation.
I added Tyler Anderson everywhere I could in Fab this year, just because it was like, oh, he's going to be in the Dodgers rotation. I don't really care about anything beyond that.
Yeah, right. He's going to have like a 260 BABIP, and they're going to take one of his pitches and make it better. And oh, hey, they did that.
So Spencer Strider is where I want to start on specific pitchers. He's going to probably be, of all the guys we talk about, he'll have the highest ADP. You know, hopefully the oblique thing is just a minor issue. Leads all starters in K percentage, K minus walk percentage, but he does it in a very in a way that you don't see many of those other guys near the top of that leaderboard do it, with the 67% fastball, 28% slider, changeup usage under 5%. You know, what have you been? I mean, he's just such an anomaly to me. I'm sure he is to you in many ways as well. Like, where do you think like his ADP should be next year? Because he has all these things pointing in his favor, but it is such a kind of a unique way that he does it, with just the fastball being such an elite pitch for him.
Yeah, I just had a sit down conversation with him where, you know, the entire conversation was, can you make it work with two pitches? And you know, he was like, yeah, I've engineered these two pitches to be the best that they can be. And, you know, there is a philosophical question there within Stuff Plus. Is like, you know, your Stuff Plus is going to be better if you only throw your best pitches. But there is research out there that says you turn the lineup more over more often, and your third time through the order penalty is lessened if you throw more pitches. So that's an old schoolism that's 100% true. And so, you know, do you throw a pitch that has lower Stuff Plus more often, because you want to turn the lineup more often? Do you devalue somebody like Strider and say, oh no, it's just because he only throws two pitches and he's really just a closer that's out there for five innings. Now that he's done it for so many innings, I tend to believe him. He convinced me that he can do it. And his two pitches are just so excellent. And he is number one among starting pitchers and Stuff Plus. And it's not like last year we had 37 pitches at the end of the year with a high Stuff Plus. Then you're looking at a guy who you're like, well, you know, he looks great in 37 pitches, but now you're looking at a guy who's had enough sample. So I'm going to believe in him. And I think he should absolutely be a top 10 pitcher next year.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's probably where it's going to settle because of just how dominant he's been. And you are going to have naysayers.
The warning sign is, you remember Luis Gil?
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, he popped really hard last year in the model, and he had 527 pitches. He was maybe top 30 instead of, you know, top five like Strider was last year. But still, that's a two pitch pitcher that didn't succeed. So,
well, I mean, we've seen like Heel, Glasnow, and Lamet all needed, you know, their arms basically broke
surgery too. Yeah,
so it's. Is that a
and Strider's coming off surgery?
Causation, you know, yeah, like so. I think that might be. I mean, it'll probably just come down to what the price is. But you know, do you buy? Like, would being a two pitch guy, if you're throwing your fastball that much, be more of an injury risk than if you were a four pitch guy? Like, I don't know the answer.
when they did the study on like what puts stress on your shoulder, like with the Modus sleeve, there's a big study by Driveline where they looked at just basically the raw stress on the elbow, and what they found was velo is the stressor.
Okay.
The only asterisk, and it's actually kind of an important one, is that if you correct for velo, sliders are actually more stressful. So basically the most stressful pitch in baseball is like DeGrom's 93 mile an hour slider. And the second most stressful pitch in baseball is like anybody's 99 mile an hour fastball. So Strider doesn't necessarily have that 93 mile an hour slider, but he does throw really, really hard on the fastball. So I tend to think that we overvalue our ability to know who's going to be hurt this year.
Yeah. I mean, no matter what happens with him, people will be doing "I told you so's" on either side of the aisle, right? Like if he's healthy, people will be like, I thought he was going to get hurt, you know? And then if he gets hurt, people will be like, can't believe you guys were taking this guy in the second round or whatever it is. So
yeah, but somebody will still take DeGrom in the second round. So
of course. Yeah.
I'm hoping, you know, if I do have an approach on Strider is to, I would love to get him in like the third or fourth, you know, and have like it'd be awesome to get three hitters and then Strider as my ace. I feel like, you know, I'll have a team or two where that does happen. And then we'll just have to see what the hype machine looks like for Strider next year. But if you do think about top 10 pitchers, there's going to be a lot of pitchers that are good, you know, in that 10, and Strider could fit anywhere depending on what you think of Scherzer's back, you know, DeGrom's everything. You know, there's going to be some decisions between injury or youth.
Could you make a case that, I mean, I think most people would obviously say DeGrom's the best on a per start basis. Could you make a case Strider's the second best behind DeGrom on a per start basis next year?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he's a closer for five innings.
Right. Yeah. That's a really good way to put it.
That's what it looks like. So I'm going to believe in it.
So I was part of the very first NFBC draft for 2023 where we just did seven rounds. It was probably almost a month ago.
But you've already done a draft?
Yeah. Well, we've already done the first seven rounds of a draft, and then we're going to pick it up. And so Strider obviously went. I think he went like in the middle of those seven rounds. And then the only other guy that I was going to ask you about who went in those first seven rounds is Nick Lodolo, who was
a top 100. Did.
Yeah, he was a top 100 pick. And that was before, like, he had those two dominant starts like a week or two ago. And that was before those even. So, you know, the strikeout rate's 10th best among starters. He's got the walk rate down over his last like six, seven starts. I know that had been an issue for him earlier in the year. Obviously, don't like the team context, really anything about it. You know, a big pitcher,
arc,
back injury. You know, like there's some stuff that's sort of outside of his skills that you could point to. But is there anything within just his stuff and his command that gives you any pause?
There is a negative in the command. I think he's about to break the hit by pitch record for a red starter, and you know you're talking about half a season. So, you know, in the suite of pitching plus, there's a location plus. He's got a 96.6. You know, in terms of starters that are around him that have similar stuff but similarly bad command is. It's not even Yu Darvish. It used to be Yu Darvish. Man, who's got Tanner Houck? If he was a starter, but he, you know, he lost the ability to start. But I think the Reds will start him, right?
Of course.
Yeah. His location plus is not good. It, like for example, Christian Javier had better location plus.
Okay.
He's not someone, and similar stuff plus. So he's not someone who's known for having good command.
Right. I mean, what's your, for a rookie like this, do you project improvement there, especially if they
year to year. And year to year, Stuff Plus is stickier. So just generally stuff is stickier. And that's why I think teams, it's part of why teams, why is Tyler Anderson available every year? Is because he's not a stuff guy. He's a location guy. And so nobody wants to like buy him for 3 or 4 years because, you know, one or two of those years is not going to be good. JT Brubaker came up. It was a big location guy and didn't have any stuff. We saw how that worked out. I'd much rather bet on someone who has stuff because location is not as sticky year to year. And because if you look up and down Lodolo's minor league career, he didn't have bad command every year. And someplace like a Fangraphs has a 55-60 component grade on the command. So I see a guy who has stuff similar to what Shane McClanahan had in his small start. And of course, McClanahan had slightly better command. So I'm not saying that Lodolo is the next McClanahan. I'm not going to push him that much. I'm a little surprised that he went in your first 7 rounds, but I will be looking to have shares of him. So I am generally bullish on him.
Yeah, I think he's going to be really, it'll be fun to see sort of where the market settles on him. I generally don't want to invest in Reds starters.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons, you definitely—it's really exciting just to the strikeout potential that he has, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Then his
and there are pitchers who've succeeded in Cincinnati, and like back to our previous conversation, maybe he's just one of these guys like a Dylan Cease that's just gonna, you know, outstuff all the problems.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not a, you know, the park is a big issue. They've usually had really bad defenses that could, you know, I don't know how
there
much
there are some players coming up now.
Yeah, that like Barrero's
okay and Steer's probably okay. He's played some short, so if he's their third baseman, that's not so bad.
So that could be, yeah, that could be trending maybe in the right direction, but it's still, you know, they're going to be a bad team next year. And then his teammate Hunter Green kind of quietly has just been really dominant with the, you know, 12th best K rate among starters. And he's already up to 115 innings, more innings than Lodolo because Lodolo missed that time. And, but like with Strider, Green is kind of a, you know, like a 5% third pitch guy. Are you in, or are you kind of pessimistic on Green for next year?
I'm in. I've got to be intellectually consistent, if anything. Also, just in Stuff Plus, it goes Strider, DeGrom, Green. It's not something I need to tell you. And Burns is next. It's not something I need to tell you that he has great stuff. But also, his locations, you know, aren't as bad as you might expect. They're round league average. And really, he's relevant to kind of the Lodolo story where, sure, Lodolo's location plus isn't great. Neither was Hunter Green's when he first started. And he's had some starts where it wasn't any good for him. So when he started out, he was having some 94s and 96. He had a 75 location plus early on. That's when he was throwing everything straight down the middle and gave up a bunch of homers. But if you look at his last sort of 5 to 7 starts, they're all above 100. And then in his very last start, he had 109 location plus. So, you know, I think location is one of those things that can be coached because you start knowing where the bad misses are. And you start, your major league coaches really can be better at like giving you a cue. Oh, just aim a little bit higher or aim a little bit lower, you know, like, and then just it's something that happens over time. You just, the command does get better over time. Green's made the adjustment that Lodolo hasn't. So if Green's going behind Lodolo, that doesn't make much sense to me.
So if you were on the clock at pick 105 and I told you had to take one of those two, you'd take Green.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think the ADP will be very close with those guys. I think people will maybe be split a little bit on it, but
I bet you the min-max range will be big on both of them, though.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think
you'll be able to get Lodolo 2 or 3 rounds later and cheaper in some drafts. You know, if, so you could leave both of them on the clock, get something else, and just take whoever drops.
If they were both going to be in the Guardians starting rotation on opening day, I feel like
you'd see them
creep up into like the third round probably.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so you know, we talked about location plus. I'm interested to see where this guy rates. George Kirby has the only starter with a lower walk rate among starters with 70 plus innings pitched is Corey Kluber. And Kirby is obviously a rookie. He's 15th in K minus walk, throws a ton of pitches, but 57% usage of his 95 mile an hour fastball. How does he rate?
Yeah, he has, I think, I can sort by location plus. I just want to by stuff plus, he's without any limits. So this has a lot of pitchers in it, 407th. But it's 99 location plus, and among starters, 99 is about average. So he's a guy who has average stuff and standout location. By among starters, his location is, let's see here. Let me see who's above him. Brandon Woodruff is above him. You can count Chris Paddock if you want. Ross Stripling, Jacob DeGrom, Aaron Nola. That's it. So he's a top 10 guy already by command. And I think once you, one thing you see about Location Plus is not as strong year to year, but a lot of that's on the edges, on the bad side, in smaller samples. Usually when you have like those guys that I mentioned, they've all been tops in Location Plus every year. Like Aaron Nola is tops in Location Plus every year. Jacob DeGrom is tops. Chris Paddock has been tops. He, you know, in some ways, Kirby looks like a better Chris Paddock in terms of having a wider arsenal. Having a similar kind of overall level of stuff. But the reason why I like Kirby better than that is because over the last little bit when it comes to his slider, he's changed it. And he's now throwing a totally different slider than he threw at the beginning of the season. And it's a much better pitch by Stuff Plus. So I think, you know, next year, he'll have both above average stuff and elite command, which makes him a really fascinating and I think high floor pitcher with a decent amount of ceiling, you know? So yeah. I really like Kirby.
Does he remind you of like maybe like a young Shane Bieber or young Aaron Nola or anything like that?
Yeah, the weird thing is that, you know, the numbers bear this out, and I think he said the same to me, is that his changeup is his best pitch. So, but he's learning a really good slider. So who does that remind you of? Maybe DeGrom a little bit, you know?
Mm.
In just that DeGrom had this changeup and this curve, and then he learned that harder slider, right? And then he kind of, and he added all the velo. But like, for example, Kirby told me, hey, you know I'm throwing at 84, 85 now, but I want to throw at 89. And in the last start, he threw at 87. So okay. there's a fair amount of like, you know, what is that? Like he sees things and then he does them. You know what I mean? Like it's like adjustability or coachability or.
Well, he's kind of a savant. Like
savantish.
You know, he always had just these insane, like walk rates. Like I think in college, like he just would go long stretches without walking a single guy. And, you know, that obviously translated into pro ball and then the stuff kind of ticked up a little bit. I was more so thrown out like Nola and, Bieber as kind of guys who I think when they first broke in, people gave them sort of the high floor tag. And then they emerged as SP1s.
No, I was focused too much on the pitch types. Yeah, I like it. I like it. And I think that Kirby's slider, you know, could get into that kind of Nola territory where, you know, he's got that out pitch that he can command at all times. And then he's got these other pitches he throws around it. So Yeah, I think Nola is a good comp.
All right, I got some more pitchers to ask Eno about, but first we're going to head to a message from our sponsors.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So Rare MLB is an NFT-based, free-to-play baseball game played with officially licensed Major League Baseball cards. Sign up today at SoRare.com/MLB and you'll receive 13 common cards to start your collection. Build 7-player lineups from cards in your collection and play weekly competitions with scoring based on real-life player performance. Compete for rewards with other fans around the world. For more information on gameplay and to sign up, visit SoRare.com/MLB. There's no better time to join So Rare than ahead of their postseason gameplay. All right, you know, let's we can move a little quicker on some of the rest of these guys, but what with Reed Detmers, what were your expectations coming into the year? How did he kind of do relative to those? And is he someone that interests you at all for 2023?
The model did not like Reed Detmers coming into the season. I was out on him. You could call it a miss, but a fair amount of what he did this year was due to development. And I think maybe some of it was just, I didn't think the Angels would develop him. I didn't really see an out pitch. You know, there wasn't like elite command with it. So I didn't really see it. What he did over the course of the season was go back to his old slider. That gave him a pitch, with basically like 140 stuff plus. So he's now got that out pitch, an elite out pitch in the slider. And he pushed the four seam fastball, you know, closer and closer to league average in terms of stuff. So by the end of the season, he had basically an average fastball and basically an elite slider. And that's, you know, what are we talking about with Spencer Strider is that combination. He throws these other pitches to get through the game. I'm going to call it a miss for me. And going next season, you know, mostly on board with him again.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think he might be kind of a higher floor guy for a guy his age, but maybe doesn't have quite the ceiling of some of those guys we talked about previously. What about Rowan C. Contreras? I feel like I was kind of actually surprised to see where his strikeout rate is on the year. Feel like the stuff should be better than that. Is he maybe someone that could break out and up that next year, or are there reasons to be concerned?
No, I totally think so. And I think you can even see it with traditional stats. To have a 12.5% whiff rate next to an 8K9 is pretty rare. And then in terms of stuff plus, he's sitting there next to Mitch Keller, who actually I think I don't want to say like worst case scenario, but he may have some of the fits and starts and steps forward and steps backs that Mitch Keller did, because he also does not have great command. And so I would say the reason he does not turn that swing and miss stuff into strikeouts is command.
Sure.
And the games, I think the games where you see where he has fewer walks, he has more strikeouts. And I don't know if that sounds dumb, but
no.
You know, I think then you'll have games where he has 3 walks and 3 strikeouts, and you'll have games where he has like 7 strikeouts and no walks. And like, it just shows you that like there is legitimate upside here. And I'm super excited about him. I would acquire him because I think the player development is improving in Pittsburgh. The coaching is improving, and he's at least got the raw stuff.
Yeah, I think that kind of all checks out with sort of what I was thinking with him, just executing those high leverage pitches when it's a 2-2 counter or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
An aside, would you rather have a pitcher for 2023 who's going to be in the Pirates rotation or a pitcher for 2023 who's going to be in the Reds rotation?
I'll take the Pirates, man. I think they get too much crap for player development. There's a lot of good pieces in their player development process. I think Rodolfo Castro is breaking out. You know, I think that they've found some pieces this year. They're getting better. They've got people in place that I really respect in the minor leagues. And then there's that park is just a beautiful soft landing.
Yeah, absolutely. Edward Cabrera was a guy that I, like a month ago, I thought he was going to be just a super trendy name in drafts next year. He's really fallen off, I think, over his last 4 or 5 starts or so. I wonder if, you know, health has always been kind of a thing with him. I wonder if he's just kind of fatigued at this point. But like 93 mile an hour changeup is his most used pitch. 4 pitches that he uses over 50% of the time, and they all average over 84 miles an hour. So it's just, you know, I think there's the pieces are there maybe, but there's some other questions. What are your thoughts on Edward Cabrera?
I think that's exactly it. There are wild oscillations in the model in terms of his command and his stuff. He's shown a stuff as low as 84 this year, and as high as 113.
Wow.
He's shown a location as low as 84 and as high as 101. Generally not good locations, but I would be willing to look the other way on that if I thought he was throwing his best pitch mix, but I don't think he is. I think he's been pushed towards a sort of fastball, four-seam fastball slider thing, and I think he would do better throwing the sinker more. However, I wonder if throwing the sinker more removes that changeup from his arsenal as being as effective because, you know, 93 mile an hour changeup, 96 mile an hour sinker, they don't look that dissimilar in terms of movement. So would he, you know, he has to pair that changeup, I think, with his four-seamer to make it effective. The change in the sinker are separated by 2 miles an hour and 3 inches vertically. They're very similar. So I don't know. I think he has some philosophical things to come up with. Is he going to be a four-seam change guy, or is he going to be a sinker breaking ball guy? And I think trying to be all those things is affecting his command poorly. Anyway, I agree with you just generally. I think there is superstar upside, but I wouldn't want to overdraft him. I'd want to draft him as somebody that I could put, like, I'd honestly want to draft him as somebody I could put on my bench,
mm-hmm.
and I could start him at home and, you know, and then hope that everything comes together and, oh, hey, I got an everyday starter, every week starter, you know, but I don't think I'd want to draft him and have to put him in week one. Like, what if week one is at Atlanta? you just like Edward Cabrera at Atlanta?
Yeah, no, I mean, I would not want to roll him out there for that.
Yeah, right. Like, which one do you get? If you get the bad one, you just got, well, like, 5 earned on the first week.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it would come down to the command. I mean, he has good enough stuff where if the stuff is working and he's throwing strikes, he should be able to have success against, you know, any lineup on the right night. But the command, like a lineup like Atlanta, they're going to make you, you know, throw strikes and stuff. So I also think Craig Mish mentioned this to me earlier this season, but like, I think he might be a guy that they move maybe in the right deal this off season.
I mean, we've been waiting for that for everybody. I kept thinking it would be Pablo Lopez.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that the ask was extremely high, and they might have been hoping that Cabrera would show a little bit more down the stretch here to really up his trade value, because they just need more offensive firepower on that team, more good young hitters. So,
dude, Cabrera is so weird. You know, for the year, his changeup is his most used pitch.
Yeah, that's – yeah, it's crazy. I saw that when I was prepping for the show. He throws that 93-mile-an-hour changeup more than –
he did start using the sinker almost as much as the four-seam later on. Yeah, it's – I mean, the whiff rates are great on those pitches. It looks like it can work, but it also looks like he's hiding his fastballs.
He seems like the type of guy that a lot of the smartest teams would just love to get their hands on. But then you don't know like how healthy his arm is, because that's just been a thing with him for years.
And like if he's throwing that power changeup as much as his four seam, like maybe it's not so surprising that he's
right
health issues.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I suspect he'll get overdrafted, but you know, if I luck into a couple shares, I'll be happy about it.
So one guy that I sometimes this will happen in September where I'm just like, I'm going to have this guy all over the place next year, is Kyle Bradish, with Baltimore. But I'm interested to see what your numbers say. Cause he's been really effective, since returning to the big league rotation in late July, not missing as a ton of bats necessarily, but it might be similar to the Ronsi Contreras issue where the command might be holding him back there. But what do you think about Bradish?
Yeah, the overall year numbers for him are decent. 104 stuff plus, 99 location plus. You know, that is kind of close to, this is actually a decent comp, I think. Jake Junis. Because what happened was Bradish has an elite breaking ball. And I don't really think he has the other stuff. You know what I mean? Like I don't believe in almost any other pitch he throws. And so what happened was when he came back, he just used the elite breaking ball a lot more. That's the sort of Jacob Junis thing. I'm trying to get the numbers up here right now, but percent usage at the end of the season, he was using the slider more than the cutter. The cutter is basically his fastball. So the best stretch of a season by Stuff Plus, where it was better than those overall numbers, and the best set of numbers of the season where in terms of results were all when he was using the slider as much, if not more, than his cutter and playing off of that. So does that make you nervous?
A little, yeah. I mean, I don't love that.
You don't love Jake Junis.
That you only like one of his pitches.
But I like Jake Junis.
Well, I loved using Jake Junis earlier this year, just kind of for the team context and stuff. But I wouldn't like. I was thinking Bradish could be my Eric Lauer this year, where I just have him on every team. But I wouldn't want to have Jake Junis on every team.
Well, the one nice thing about Bradish is he still throws more pitches. Like Junis is throws two pitches and barely throws the change, right? Bradish still does throw these other pitches,
right?
But like you can see it in the whiff rates. Slider is 18% whiff rate, even though he's thrown it 521 times this year. So like that's pretty good. They know the slider's coming, still can't hit it. So that's an evidence of a dominant pitch. Change 9% whiff rate, league average is 14. Curve 8% whiff rate, league average is 11. Cutter 8% whiff rate, league average is around 10. So I do like cutters, and I do think that having an elite pitch is good enough for me to be interested. But I do think that I'd rather have him. I mean, people hit 314 off the cutter, you know.
What like the Orioles? I feel like they have, you know, four or five guys that one of them might just pop next year, and I'm not sure who it's going to be. Like, I don't know, Kramer, Wells, Bradish. I know Bauman was on a roll towards the end of the year in the minors. Is there anyone else that maybe stands out to you as Because, I mean, they're all going to be, you know, Grayson Rodriguez might have the highest ADP of any.
Yeah, right. They're all going to be cheap.
So
I do think I'm going to have some Bradish shares. I think I'd rather in those bench rounds, you know, so I don't have to like start them in New York. But you know, Bradish is the model likes Bradish probably best other than Wells. But Wells is a little bit more of a command first. Bradish's stuff plus is better than Wells's. So that makes me a little bit nervous. But also, you know, Wells told me during the season that he expected that he would start to try and strike people more people out in the future. And he's got 11.3% whiff rate and a 6.6 K9 and a history of double digit strikeout rates in the minors. So I do think that I'd lean Wells. But I do like Wells and Bradish again next year. I think those would be fine bench pieces. I want to have in NFBC formats like 3 to 4 starting pitchers on my bench. Maybe 4 is the what I really want because I want to have 4 guys that I don't want to stream anymore. Mm-hmm. Streaming was like rough this year, and I would much rather have 4 guys on my bench that might be in a 2-start week.
And that plays to your strengths too. Like if you kind of are peppering guys in that like 300 to 400 range.
Right. Yes.
Guys that are too good to go undrafted, but
yeah.
But
and
like,
then, you know. And then also on top of it, if you have 4 guys on your bench and you see somebody on the wire you like, but it's not a 2-start guy, those guys end up actually being values in FAAB because everyone else is kind of focused on the 2-start guys. You can be like, bam, I'm going to pick, you know, Ronzi up in a 1-start week and maybe not even start him this week, but I'm going to start him the next time he's a 2-starter. So I do agree with people that 2-start weeks are super valuable and you want them. But the way I want to get there is a little bit different next year.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Brian Bayo with the Red Sox, really, you know, first half of his rookie season in the big leagues, not successful, but he's turned it on of late. I feel like he might be a guy that pops on stuff plus, but the command is in the control, maybe a lag behind.
It didn't really like him, but there is a caveat with stuff plus, and this is something that I've heard from teams themselves, which is that it's really hard to capture a good changeup in stuff plus, even with the seam shifted wake stuff in there, even with all the information we have. I've heard from teams that they will, if in their like sort of true talent model, like their projections or whatever, they will incorporate results on the changeup quicker than you know, like they'll right. weight results quicker than with other pitches. So if they're trying to evaluate a young pitcher, they'll use the stuff plus for the slide or the stuff plus for the curve. But if they actually have some results on the change, they'll kind of balance the results with the stuff plus. So stuff plus says it's a 92 change. This is a guy who's come up. Everybody says it's been an excellent change. And then you look at the outcomes on the pitch, 24% whiff rate on the change, batters hitting 182. So I'm going to tell you right now, don't use pitching plus on Brian Bayo. Like just I think scout him. Just watch some of the later. I think he looked better later on. I think he's absolutely draftable.
All right. I wanted to mention this guy because I gave you kind of a list of sort of more fringy guys and just wanted to see if anyone jumped out. And I saw a lot of people, you know, kind of swooning over him last night on Twitter, but Luis Ortiz with the Pirates.
Oh my God. He really pops, dude. 135 stuff plus. Like, in fact, he's the breakout. You know what I mean? Like, he's the McClanahan last year or the Strider last year. You know what I mean? Like, he's the short sample. Who the heck is this? He has the same stuff plus as John Duran and same as Strider. Like what? Now, usually you want 400 pitches. We got 157 in the model. So maybe it'll change, but stuff plus comes online way faster. Let's stop talking about him. how I feel. You know what I mean?
At least he's in the NL. We want.
Yeah. No, I just mean like I feel like I hope the hype machine doesn't go nuts because I want him.
Yeah, maybe maybe he's reached his innings limit for the year, Pirates.
Yeah, right. Put him away.
Bailey Falter, kind of, will go from a guy with crazy stuff to a guy with a 91 mile an hour fastball that he uses 64% of the time. But he's had success, and he seems to have a, you know, it's not a deep rotational depth chart there in Philly. Is he like, how over his head is he right now?
A little bit. I mean, the funniest thing is Stuff Plus likes his changeup best. And I talked to him about it, and he's like, "You're crazy." He's like, "It is by far my worst pitch. I hate it. I've been trying to make it better my whole life. There's no way that's my best pitch." And like it was fun. Like he wasn't mad. Like, then he also pointed out, just look at my numbers on it. The results, people are hitting 400 off of his changeup this year. So, another model miss on a changeup. What I see is a kind of an Eflin type. I see a guy who has good command of a lot of four pitches and is going to blow up sometimes. He's in a bad park. He's not going to have, he's not someone I want to bet on year to year. What I would love to see is have him go undrafted or, I would love to see him go undrafted and then pop in the model and have a good start or two and then pick him up early in the season. I don't want to count on him going into next year because he just doesn't have great stuff. I think your read on him is right.
Yeah, or maybe he gets. I mean, if you finish the year with a ERA in the threes, someone's going to draft you. But maybe he gets dropped after he gets shelled by Atlanta or something like that.
Right. And I'd be watching kind of his location numbers and his under the hood stuff. Yeah, maybe that's more likely. Drafted, dropped, and then I pick him up later in the season.
Cody Morris is a guy that I had been eagerly awaiting to debut for quite some time. Results have kind of been mixed, although he is coming off his best start. Mostly just fastball, cutter, changeup. What have you seen with Cody Morris?
Poor locations.
Yeah.
And I think that will maybe mask some decent stuff under the hood. I think all of his three pitches look average or better. I don't know if he has an incredible out pitch, but if the locations improve, you know, the whiff rate is there for him. The whiff rate was there in the minors. The strikeouts were in the minors. You know, he's got a 40-45 command grade on Fangraphs. But I really think that the Guardians are great at sort of coaching that up and game planning for that. So I don't know exactly where he'll fit into my rankings in terms of I think, you know, we also have that issue that we were talking about with the good teams. It's like, how many innings? Where will he be on the depth chart? Like, where do you think he'll be on the depth chart going into next season? It's kind of hard to answer that.
Well,
right
like
now.
He missed so much time that one way
how
or
many
another,
innings does he have? Yeah,
you're gonna have to maneuver. Like, you know, he's gonna spend some time not in the big league rotation, whether that's to begin the season or to finish the season. Or
jeez, he has 45 innings this year.
Yeah, because he was out till I think he started. He missed the first 4 months with a shoulder injury. I think his changeup has a chance to be pretty devastating. It can look really, really good at times. But yeah, like they have, you know, five guys clearly ahead of him, and then they
he
just
has no innings.
All these, you know, they have. Just a bunch of really good pitching prospects coming up behind him. But I think the results might be mediocre enough that
he'll be out there,
that he won't be costly in drafts.
I like him. You know, yeah, there's just like Espino is coming hard after him. And, you know, they trade pitching for hitting and try to clear that up? But
yeah, I mean, who's about to get expensive in the rotation? Because that'll probably be the guy they trade.
Yeah. So, there have been a lot of Plesak rumors, and that may not, that may
that,
have,
that might be, a, that might be, there are other ways of getting him off the roster.
Right. That's true. Did you hear his agents dropped him?
Oh, that's not surprising.
That's not a good sign.
Like, he might be just DFA'd or something. I don't know. Like, who's giving anything other than like cash to get him?
I could see a rebuilding team like, you know, like Pittsburgh or something, like, just, you know, we won't give you much. We'll give you a reliever or something.
If he was a really kind of well-mannered man, who
coachable
went to church and stuff, like the Royals.
Oh, the Royals. Yeah. Looks at too much porn for the Royals.
Yeah, no, they wouldn't be scared off by his bad stuff. They would just no,
they wouldn't. They have plenty of bad stuff in Kansas City.
So another guy that you mentioned has kind of stood out to you, Graham Ashcraft with the Reds. His, you know, he's a ground ball machine, throws the cutter a ton. Strikeouts have kind of lagged behind. Is that sort of what you see, or do you see room for the K's to bump up?
You know, my model has some trouble with him because it designates a primary pitch as your fastball and then defines everything off of it. And I don't think in Ashcraft's situation, they're defining his primary fastball as his sinker, the model is. In which case, you know, I think that is incorrect. I think his cutter is his primary pitch. In any case, I think you can't hold it too far against the model that it has a trouble with a guy who throws a cutter, a four seamer, and a sinker, and as a starter, you know? Right. Like, and he gets the most whiffs on his cutter, which is pretty much his primary pitch. So, it's a really interesting combination, but the velo is there, the stuff plus was improving as the season went on, I think mostly from just using the cutter more. I just wish he had any other pitch.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go back to, you know, Cincinnati, and I don't know, man, he's going to be really hard to rank. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think he'll be very easy to draft based on, you know, just that people are going to look at the strikeouts and they're not going to expect,
not going to believe. Yeah.
Look at the team context and stuff. So, I mean, he fits into this sort of plan of, cause like, I don't think he goes undrafted in like a main event. I think he's a guy that someone takes with like their,
but you could put him on a bench, yeah, and, you know, at the beginning of the season, just start him in Pittsburgh and in Chicago and stuff. And
yeah, you hope that he got better in the off season.
I think incredibly easy to like give you an action point on, which is in the spring, if he's talking about a new pitch, believe him. And if you can watch a spring start and see that he's actually throwing a curveball or a changeup or something else and it looks okay, then I think he's sort of primed for a breakout, because he's done it. He's done pretty well with very little.
Yeah.
Like basically three fastballs.
Yeah. He's already, I mean, he's exceeded my expectations already. Yeah. So how about, I want to lump these next three sort of together, because I think they're coming from orgs that have had a lot of success. They're coming from orgs with crowded depth charts. The ability to throw strikes has been their biggest weakness basically at every step. Mm. But Ryan Pepiot, Hunter Brown,
and Kyle Muller. I was in my head with Pepiot. Hunter Brown and who?
Kyle Muller. So Muller's just been sort of out of sight, out of mind. He had this really impressive stretch at AAA before he hurt like his non-throwing hand or something, and hasn't been quite as good since then. But it seemed like he'd fixed his control issues for a bit there, and the stuff seemed good to me in his most recent big league start. But obviously it's crowded there in Atlanta. And then sort of same thing with Pepiot and Brown. I would expect Muller to maybe be towards the bottom of your list of those three. But like, do you
– yeah.
Is Brown the guy based on kind of what you're saying?
I think so, dude. So, you know, here's the thing that's funny. Pepiot and Brown have similar-ish stuff plus. Actually, Brown has a little bit better. I don't know if you've seen it on like Pitching Ninja or whatever, but he has a like a 94 mile an hour cutter, I guess.
Hunter Brown. Oh, Hunter Brown. Oh, yeah, Hunter Brown. Yep.
That was really really opened my eyes. I guess they call it a slider. It's modeled after Justin Verlander's slider.
Right. He looks up to Justin Verlander.
So he throws a 92 mile an hour Justin Verlander slider. So, you know, I think he's good. What? How does he have 1,000 pitches in Brooks baseball? Am I looking at the wrong Hunter Brown? Maybe it has his spring stuff in it. Oh, it must have his spring stuff in it. All competition. Let me just do MLB. Aha, that's what happened. It had spring stuff in it. Wow. Anyway, yeah, 93 mile an hour slider, 97 mile an hour four seam with ride, and then a curveball with 12 inches of drop, an 83 mile an hour curveball. Dude, I'm all over Hunter Brown. And here's the last bit that's kind of cool. Ryan Pepiot, you hear bad command, you know bad command grades, 91 location plus, among the worst location plus in among starters. So really, his location plus is so bad he may not be a starter.
Oh yeah,
may not work.
So with Pepiot, I think his changeup it has the potential to be one of the best changeups in the game. But I went through and I looked at the video of all of his walks in the big leagues this year.
And they're all on changeups.
he's missing the zone with a three ball count. He's missing the zone by feet sometimes, you know, just like nowhere. Yeah. Like some of them are just, you know, the hitter just didn't have to do anything in the at bat. Right. So,
yeah. And there have been pitchers like I really like Josh James when he was coming up. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he had stopped top stuff, but he had location pluses like this, you know, and it just didn't work out. And lastly, I looked at what predicts innings pitched per appearance, command or stuff. And obviously it's command, but that tells you something. Like if you're looking at who's going to be good, you want to look at stuff. If you're looking at who's going to be a starter or not, that's why I'm okay with Strider. Like he has good locations. He's mm-hmm. not Josh James, you know, he can actually place the ball. And that's what he was telling me. He's like, I said, well, can anybody keep holding? Just like high. I'm going to look for high hard. And that's it. He says, yeah, people do that to me all the time. Then I throw a low fastball. And I was like, oh yeah, duh. If you have the command, then you can do that. And then all of a sudden you have more, seems like you have more pitches. Anyway, Hunter Brown, 30/40 grades on his command. I had above average location plus in the minors because I had some minor league data, and he has a 104 location plus in the majors. So I don't know why he was giving up walks in the minors, but sometimes people give up walks in the minors because the umpires aren't as good.
Yeah, like his stuff might have been so electric that the umps just had a hard time calling his game.
How many 93, 94 mile an hour sliders do they see?
Right.
So I don't know. I'm all over Brown. The only question is, you know,
what's your max bid in AL labor?
Oh, you can't do this to me. I'm gonna try and repeat. No,
I'm gonna throw him out for five. Let's see what happens.
I might go that this is also another one where the action item is really obvious in spring. What's the depth chart? Mm-hmm. If he's the sixth starter, I don't know if I want to go to five. I want to get him at like two or three. But five is interesting because you might be able to buy him for five. He gets put to the minors and you reserve him, and then you've got an awesome pitcher in reserve.
Yeah, I mean, is McCullers going to be healthy?
Yeah, so that's what I'd be watching. I'd be watching health. I'd be watching to see what they do with Verlander. Do they sign him?
Right.
If they don't sign him, if they don't sign Verlander and sign somebody worse, it could just be a bridge to Brown, right? They could just sign like an Odorizzi type where they just sign somebody to start the season, but they're going to Brown eventually. So I'd be watching their signings and their health in spring.
So the Yankees traded Hayden Wesneski and Ken Waldichuk at the deadline. They've both made, I think Wesneski's made two appearances, Waldichuk a few more. Do you have a favorite out of those two?
Yeah, Wesneski. You know, he has good stuff and good command. Waldichuk's location plus is average, which I think might also surprise people because he had poor command grades and lots of walks in the minors. And he has better stuff left. So maybe my answer should be Waldichuk, but,
I like Wesneski.
Yeah. You like Wesneski. I think the results have been there a little bit better. Wins are still a category,
right?
You know?
Yeah. I mean, like can you project an A's starter for more than like 5 wins?
I'm going to be awful again there next year, I think.
Wesneski's slider is just so it moves just a ton. It's like a total frisbee.
This one calls it a curveball, but that doesn't matter in the model. 137 stuff plus is elite.
That could end up being I'm interested to see where he go, like if he just shoves in a couple more appearances this year, maybe he won't be super cheap, but he might be.
Yeah.
He might still be a small enough sample that he's cheap.
Yeah, you know, him and Luis Ortiz are like, you know, guys that I love to get near the end of the draft. Oh my God. Why have this model?
You know, Luis Ortiz was picked up in DR.
I know. I looked recently.
You know, he was, God. I mean, you know, I'm sure people that are listening to this, if you're in like a shallower league, you might still be out there. But
if he got picked up after the 9/13 start, I'm kicking myself.
I blame myself as well.
Cause he was having some buzz coming up, right? Like he had a really great year in the minors.
Yeah. Not enough buzz, obviously. You know, a guy's looking dominant. Like I had multiple people just text me during his start. I think one text per start, basically just like, what do you know about this guy?
Yeah. Like, and you know, people that fascinated or too fascinated possibly, if that's true, like it's still a very powerful stat, but K minus BB on Luis Ortiz is not going to look that good. So if people are just sort of looking at that, then they may not love him.
Just a few more to ask you about quickly, and then we'll get you out of here. Braxton Garrett, I thought, had one of the quietest successful age 24 seasons for a former top 10 overall pick that I can recall. He just had a lot of success and no one really cares. I know he doesn't throw hard. He's a, you know, kind of a lefty with a, you know, he's relying on the breaking ball and, I don't know. He's just people don't get excited about him. I think the org, there's just other guys that people get excited about there, but
quite there.
Is he anything for you? Like more than like a number four, number five, or is that just kind of what he is?
I feel like he's a bit of a trap for me. I like him. He was improving over the course of the season, but you know he still had suboptimal stuff. Which I don't think anybody watching him could see that. But, you know, he pushed it closer to 90 stuff plus late in the season. That's where he started. In the middle, there was the injuries. And he had consistently good command throughout it. And you know, you listen to interviews and he knows that he's a guy who mixes it up and has a lot of different pitches and has command of them. But with the health scares and the fact that the stuff is not amazing, I don't know. Another guy that I would love to have for my bench round, but I don't know that I want to have to throw him all the time.
What about Jeffrey Springs with the Rays?
Oh, there's a guy I believe in 100%.
Yeah. I mean, he's by far the oldest guy we've talked about. He just turned 30, but this was his first season as an actual big league starter. I think he made two starts for the Rangers in 2018, but he'd been a strict reliever in between 2018 and this year. So what do you love about Springs?
You know, his stuff is also not like standout, but everything's closer to average. His slider 109, changeup 98, fastball 95, good command of all of them. And just, he's got better stuff than Braxton. So, similar guy in that he's like a three pitch guy who's going to rely on throwing strikes, but the slider is more of an out pitch, than what Braxton has. Generally, all above board, the stuff is better. The org is, I think, you know, top org to want to have a pitcher in. And then at the end of the season, he was popping 100s and stuff plus. So, you know, I think that also, if there is some up and down nature to this year, it's the most innings he's ever thrown. So I would assume that if he got through this and the model likes him and he's got to be back in the rotation again next year, that maybe there could be some improvements where he's just used to pitching as a starter for the full season.
Could he be next year's Nestor Cortez in terms of like ADP and production?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's a good call.
Two more that you mentioned caught your eye, Ryan Nelson and Clark Schmidt. Nelson with the D-backs, obviously Schmidt with the Yankees. What have you seen from those guys?
Nelson has a really good fastball and really good command of it and above average in all respects. He debuted with, you know, was it a great start against the Padres, I think. And has managed to maintain, you know, above average stuff. The last start, he didn't have the greatest command, but two starts out of three, really good command. I think that Arizona Diamondbacks get overlooked. And I think he's actually closer than some of the other guys we've talked to in terms of, I'd be willing to draft him somewhere where I had to start him, every week because, I don't know. I know the strikeouts aren't there, but the command is really good. And he just, reminds me of some other pitchers in the model where, it all looks good. And the model, for example, was trained on runs allowed, not whiffs. So, you know, like theoretically we're finding guys who can have soft contact and command is related to soft contact. So I know we're chasing something that some people think doesn't exist in some ways, but I think Ryan Nelson could be the kind of guy who would get there.
And he's interesting for the, you know, next year with the no shift. Cause he's been a soft contact guy, but not necessarily a ground ball guy.
Uh-huh. That's so funny. They can still shift outfielders, and the outfield shift has been shown to be maybe more effective even than the infield shift. So that's an interesting idea. And then what was the other name?
Schmidt.
Oh, Clark Schmidt. You know, I just picked him up in my 12-team dynasty that, you know, I'd lost my playoff round. And so I had a free pickup. Like, you can drop a reliever because I, you know, next year I'm going to pick up new relievers anyway, you know. So I dropped Jose Alvarado and picked up Clark Schmidt just because I want to have Clark Schmidt on my roster when the Yankees trade him or it gets announced that he's in the rotation to start the year. He's a guy that had a natural cut ride four seamer and a slow curve. And they added a seam shifted wake sinker and seam shifted wake slider, like sweeper, to his mix. He has good command, and so I see this as a triumph of player development for the Yankees, and probably the sixth starter going into next season. So it's kind of hard to know exactly what the action point is, you know, in terms of your league. If he gets traded, he bumps into, I want to draft him everywhere. If I know he's in a rotation, I want to draft him everywhere. But he may just be the up and down guy for the Yankees next year.
Yeah, I mean, a good draft and hold guy, I think at the very least, because, you know, he's
at some point.
Yeah, he's no worse than seventh on their depth chart. And, you know, depending on Domingo Germán and then, you know, Montas's health and, you could definitely see an avenue to double digit starts for Schmidt.
Yeah, but like in terms of like 12 team or NFBC or something,
no,
you know, like unless there's news, you know, wait for news. But I do like I like what they've done. They found a guy that they could add a sweeper to, you know, he's like a nerd, so he's like soaking it all in and he loves it and he's very coachable and he's, you know, I don't know if I'd go as far as like the Kirby Savant level, but he has some of that where he's like, I wanted to throw the whirly and I spent, you know, 3 months trying and I got it. Yeah. Kirby's like, I want to do this. And two starts later, he's got it.
Nice. Well, this has all just been fantastic. Really appreciate you taking the time. A lot of really good breakdowns here. Do you have anything you want to promote before I let you go?
No, I'm just now finishing a piece that'll be up on The Athletic hopefully tomorrow about which players will be most affected by the new rule changes. And so that is one of those pieces that I like to write that's half real, half fantasy. Most, you know, fantasy players can read, you know, most of my pieces and find little nuggets that are fantasy related. I sort of straddle that line a little bit, but yeah, this one will have some lists of names. And overall, I think maybe we're going to overvalue the result of these rule changes.
Definitely. Well, it'll definitely be over-discussed on off-season.
Yeah, right. It'll be all season, all off-season long. And like Corey Seager is going to go in the first round. But but I think I would – mostly I'm applying the brakes.
Nice. Well, thanks again, Eno. This has been great. I'll be back with another episode next week.